Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Welcome everyone to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. My name's Ross McLeod and today's show is about one of the greatest ever to lace up a pair of boots. We are going to speak today about the recently retired Kurt Angle. But before we get to that and meet a panel of people I often tell you suck to their face, let's get the boring part out of the way, shall we? Anchor, iTunes, Spotify and all good Android sites, that's where you can find our massive back catalogue of shows and interviews with WWE, ICW, TNA, World of Sport and independent talent. At Suplex Retweet is our Twitter, Instagram and Facebook handles if you fancy a chat or have your say on our shows or polls or debates. Get involved, let us know what you think. So, let's meet the panel. First up, an Olympic gold level medalist micro-host with the same hairstyle as a 2001 Kurt Angle. He is our analyst, David Hockney.
You know what, I think that could have been a lot worse, but it's good to be here, Ross.
So from 2001 to 2002, next up's a man with a worse hairstyle than that wig Kurt Angle wore in 2002. Please welcome Scott McLeod.
Well, I don't think it's that bad. I tried putting gel in the day. I've been an effort.
Next up is a man who deserves an almighty Angle slam for ever giving that Glasgow Uni accent come to life, David Campbell, a platform to talk total bollocks on. Please welcome a man who actually beat the so-called GOAT of sweeps, Andy Mitchell.
How are you doing?
I'm good, but it'd be a lot better if he wasn't on Twitter.
Well, Dave Campbell, he's changed the online stuff, so I can't even get access to it.
Wow, how grateful is he?
He's a very, very humble man, isn't he?
And finally, for those hoping for Milkomania 2, you can forget it with this man about. He is the lacto-free EP, the man who says no thank you please to cheese, and who won't take a flutter on the butter. It's Quacky Raji.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for that. You've redeemed yourself by saying that I once in a lifetime refused cake, and I picked holes at you for that argument, not for saying, implying that I like to eat, but purely for saying that I like cake when I'm allergic to it. So well done to you, Ross McLeod, for redeeming yourself.
Wasn't this a wonderful note to start the show off on, isn't it? So we're going to talk Kurt Angle today. We're just going to have a wee run through his career. We won't be able to do it justice in 90 minutes because I think we can all agree he's possibly one of the greatest of all time,
yeah.
If not the.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll just take a wee 5 minutes to talk about his post-gold medal career. I don't know if you lads are aware of this, but Kurt Angle won a gold medal. It's something...
Did he have a broken neck?
It's not something WWE or Kurt Angle like to publicise, but yes, he won a gold medal.
It's true.
So...
That is a damn true.
He was actually offered the WWE contract in 1996, straight after the Olympics, and... Do any of you know the reason why it got turned down?
Because he didn't want to, because he said if he was on WWE, he would have to win all of his matches.
Yes.
He refused to lose, yeah.
Yeah, he said he was an actual wrestler and couldn't be.
Do you know, he trained at the Foxcatcher thing, you know, the film Foxcatcher, when the guy got shot. He was getting trained by David Schlouts, the guy who got murdered by John DuPont.
Yeah, I remember seeing something about that, because he was like... And the press, like wrestling's press, that is, which isn't real press, it's like the Sun.
Didn't even portray him in the film, even though he was a pivotal character.
I think it's one of those ones, it's like, if it's a pivotal character who went on, it'd be something good, you can't really mention that person. Yeah. So, he then had the contract offer removed, because Vince McMahon doesn't play by those rules. Mm-hmm. And he went to ECW and he threatened to sue them if they released footage of his face. Does anybody know why he threatened to sue?
Was it because of like a stunt that Raven or Sandman did?
Raven crucified the Sandman in front of a heavily, it's a quite a proud Catholic section of Philadelphia they were in at the time. Pittsburgh, I should say. Kurt Angle being the hometown boy and being a member of the Catholic Church did not find that funny and went, do not show me again, I will not be back.
Yeah, because Paul Heyman came out and said, and he said, I didn't know what was going to happen. He's like, if you don't even know what's happening, you're wrestlers, then I don't want to be a part of something like that.
Raven since spoke out and said that if it wasn't for Kurt Angle being there and causing such a fuss, they would have just left it and like, we've pissed off the fans, that's what we were meant to do.
Yeah.
But he came out and he apologised, but you see the clip of him apologising, he's just like, I'm sorry, it's like a Wayne being told by his mum, apologise for stealing that Wayne's ball.
Yeah, it was the most half-hearted apology here, because he's like, no, I thought it was really good, because probably Sandman was a carpenter and he needed to cross his cell.
Fuck's sake. Jesus Christ.
Wow.
So, after, I'm not really sure what he did between times, I'm sure he wasn't exactly out of work, he was a sports analyst. From those that have seen his sports analyst career, they've said, as good as he is at wrestling, he's as bad as he is at sports analysis.
I might have to check this out.
There's a couple of clips on YouTube, it's not the prettiest. So he was at home watching WWE one night and saw the Attitude Era. You have to question his morals if he thought the Attitude Era was fine, but you know, one stunt at an ECW show was fine. Like, it must have been a pretty tame episode of WWE if he watched.
If he wasn't watching the episode with the try to sacrifice Steve Austin.
No, yeah, imagine he was watching the crucifixion one. He was like, this is in better taste.
Yeah. It's a better made cross. It's just better workmanship.
I remember he was actually talking, I think it was a documentary that was aired before WrestleMania 19, and he was saying, like, it wasn't something he was into at first because, you know, it's all scripted and stuff, and what he did was real and sort of college level, like proper like real wrestling. But I think he sort of appreciated the fact that the guys who were in WWE at the time, they weren't just like solid athletes, you know, they were great performers. And I think that was what sort of changed his mind on it.
Yeah, he took a big shine to Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he actually, sorry, Neil.
No, that was it.
he phoned up Vince McMahon. He was put through to JR, who was head of talent relations, and asked if the offer was still there, and was told no, but you can try it like everyone else. And Triple H has said he's the most naturally gifted athlete he's ever seen. He's the only person to take to wrestling so quickly, he said. So I think that shows that do you think maybe coming in at the Attitude Era was better for him? Because he had, much like Right to Censor were the heels, he was sort of this goody-two-shoes American hero. He was very unsincere, but whereas 1996, it was kind of a transitional period. It was Doink the Clown and, you know, Duke the Dumpster Joseph.
When the time in 96 when they went to sign him, they were also signing real athletes like Mark Henry, who just done the weightlifting, and Ken Shamrock.
Ken last in the weightlifting.
Jumping on the UFC. Like, so, like, when they first debuted, Mark Henry came in that All-American jumpsuit, I think that would have been the same thing they would have done for Kurt back in 96.
I feel like with Angle, he could have fit in any era, because if they came in just before Attitude Era, he would have been a hot babyface and, you know, and we see how good he is at wrestling anyways.
Well, we say
but essentially it just benefited with him being that heel, like the dorky, like I'm better than everyone else, and it just really fit his character.
Yeah, it fit his character well, and I think in an age where, you know, a lot of the characters were quite edgy, I think his sort of goofiness added a bit of fresh air, you know, added a bit of contrast to the Attitude Era. You know, it's somebody who, hey, this is somebody we could probably poke fun of a bit.
It was the perfect foil to, like, The Rock's comedy jock or Stone Cold beer-drinking working man. He was not an elite athlete, he was just a normal guy. But we talk about, Scott said Mark Henry had his, you know, his All-American gear on. The Patriot had his theme song. So it's just as well he debuted when he did. And he debuted against the great Sean Stasiak, who I still hate. He unfollowed me on Twitter, and then he must have heard, he must listen to this show, because then I went back in, he had unfollowed me. He hadn't refollowed me, but he just blocked me, and I hadn't let any interaction with him.
But it's not going to be us listening now if he knows you're hosting.
I know.
Get him a shout out for the show.
No, screw him. So he debuts, and the match really doesn't go his way. You know, like we said, it's the Attitude Era. He's dominating Stasiak because this is a showcase for him, and the crowd do not like him. This is Rocky Maivia levels of hate. You know, the he never learns Vince with a smiling baby face, does he?
Actually, I heard from Angle that Vince told him, yeah, you're going to be out there. He gave him what he's promised to do, which essentially were heel promos, but he was meant to, as if he believed he was a good guy. And Angle was said to him, like they're not going to boo me, I'm an American. You know, like, go Vince went, trust me, they will boo you.
I think it's the fact he came across as, like, condescending as well. And it's because the night after, which was Survivor Series 99, I think the next night was actually in Pittsburgh. Yeah. And the fans were just booing him like crazy.
Because he was getting billed as a true athlete.
Aye, so he's just saying, everybody else you like is shit. He is good.
Because like, he was like telling the fans, you should look up to me. Look how great I am. I'm your hero. You should be worshipping me. I think that's what...
Because at the start of it, it's kind of like JR's kind of in his corner and Jerry's like kind of taking the piss out of him. But then he hits the promo on the mic saying, you should not boo me. And it's kind of, that's a bit disrespectful for the fans. Kind of, and then that was just...
That's when they switched.
Yeah.
I always loved that. I loved how JR and King switched allegiances so quickly, but then there was like one or two that they always loved no matter who they were.
He almost reminds me of like how the New Day started off. You know, they were meant to be sort of cheery, smiley baby faces, and the crowd was just having none of it, and then that's what inspired a New Day heel turn.
Yeah, Quacko sometimes talks about it the way Crime Time was how Vince thought people acted when the Street Profits are a true representation. I think New Day originally were meant to be this gospel choir because Vince had watched Vince had watched Sister Act on demand the night before and decided, but then obviously New Day worked when they had their true personality.
Well, you could argue he's just a massive stereotype now.
Yeah. So he goes on a wee bit of a winning streak. He loses to Taz at the Royal Rumble 2000. That's an amazing match.
Yeah.
And he then turns it around on two consecutive episodes of Raw. He defeats Chris Jericho for the Intercontinental title. And Val Venus, my God, we've got a Val Venus reference on the show. I love Val Venus.
Val Venus is great.
I remember Val Venus,
They were in the same class when Kurt was training. They two and Edge and Christian were all in the same class.
Val Venus clearly got the best of that.
He was a regular on Sunday Night Heat.
He won the European title for him, became the Eurocontinental champion.
I thought he won the Intercontinental at No Way Out.
He was on Raw and then Intercontinental on...
Was it? I thought it was the other way about. Oh, my mistake. Anyway, he's won the Eurocontinental title. Something I want to talk about here, his WrestleMania 16 match against Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho. It's a great match, but it's sort of a thrown together match. This is something you see in the early years of Kurt Angle's career, WrestleMania 16, 17 and 18, which we'll get to in a wee bit. He's in sort of thrown together matches. He's so good throughout the year, but then he never has anything at WrestleMania. So he stop, start. King of the Ring 2000. This is when Kurt Angle arrived, I think we can all agree.
We're forgetting his big show-stealing match with the show star at Backlash. Big Show dressed as...
Absence.
Big Show dressed as Hulk Hogan, even hitting the light drop and everything.
Yeah, because Angle went to, I think he went to college dorm and he was like, basically telling him to stop masturbating. Big Show shows up and he's like, I love to masturbate.
Condoms to people, apparently.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
The Attitude Era, classy as always. So, something I always like doing when we talk about King of the Ring winners is looking who they beat to get to the final. So, Kurt Angle beats Chris Jericho, which is a good start.
Mm-hmm.
Then he beats Crash Holly. And then...
Hardcore Icon.
And then he beats Rikishi. Yeah. It's sort of a... If you could not have three more different superstars if you tried to beat in their way.
Rikishi was hot that year as well after his stellar Royal Rumble performance. So I think I always look back badly on Rikishi because of the whole he ran over Steve Austin. But during that year before his heel, it was like really hot. So it's kind of a good match.
I mean, he was lucky to win that tournament. All I mean, you look down at Chris Holly being he's a boy, like, Chris Holly all came the mighty Bill Buchanan. Things could be different. This could have been the year of Bill in 2000.
Thanks, Scott's talking about the year of Bill.
Too, yeah.
Well, Rikishi, he's a dance icon, but you wouldn't trust him to valet park your car for it.
Knocking Chris Jericho at the first round as well, I mean, that's, like, adds the shock factor as well. Like, two people who... would argue, you know, could win the tournament. Yeah. You know, they're put against each other in the first round, and you think, oh, you're going to lose a favourite early. I think that was a good way to book him as well.
You had Stephanie get involved, and I think Jericho and said we had a thing for about a year, so
kept John going in the finals and gave Jericho his story going because he would fight Triple H at the next pay-per-view.
Yeah, Stephanie gets involved and she actually becomes a big part of Kurt Angle's career, like from even up until WrestleMania 34. Mm. But that sort of kick-started at that King of the Ring tournament, and that's, it was a weird tournament in whole because Rikishi was built as the overcoming babyface. He was attacked and injured by Benoit in round one. He was attacked after the bell by Vile Venus. He looked like he was going to win, and then it was just sort of like, oh, Kurt Angle won. Like, I think we all knew Kurt Angle was winning, but then the storyline in the event was like, oh, this is going to be Rikishi's night. I think, as you said, 2000 was Rikishi's year.
Yeah.
But we go from King of the Ring 2000 to the love triangle with Stephanie McMahon. A bit of a weird... He doesn't come off well here. He kisses another man's wife.
Well, he's essentially, they're just friends, and it's kind of like what he's actually like sneaking around on Triple H's...
sliding it in those DMs.
That's what he's doing.
I believe there was maybe a point where Stephanie and Kayfabe would leave Triple H for Kurt, but it was when Stephanie got more control in Korea, and Triple H basically whipped on here and went, like, would you really, people really buy you would leave a guy like me for a nerd like Kurt Angle? That's basically what the story is.
Yeah,
someone's been wielding their sledgehammer a bit.
The storyline ended...
Which one?
Jesus wow. Christ. So, this led into the triple threat match with... We talk about Miz being an afterthought with The Rock and John Cena. The Rock was an afterthought to Stephanie McMahon, Triple H and Kurt Angle. The match goes 10 minutes before The Rock enters the ring.
And Angle lands on his head when the announce table gave way.
To improvise it, didn't they, with him?
Yeah.
That was a nasty bump.
You still remember it, and don't try this at home, but who has a table like that at home? So.
Well, there is your coffee table.
So, as Scott said, Stephanie McMahon starts getting more control. Mm-hmm. We talked about stop-start. It felt very abrupt when Triple H beat my Unforgiven.
Yeah, and then he basically, like, Undertaker just hammers him, and I think it was fully loaded, which made him look like a jobber.
Yeah, he hammered him fully loaded, but then the next month he beats The Rock. The Rock in his longest run of WWE champion.
A heartbreaking moment for you.
I hated Kurt Angle growing
up. We're here for you, Russ. Let it out.
Do not touch me.
I'm not here for him.
Both of us are here for you.
None of us are here for him.
I hated Kurt Angle growing up. This was a horrible
moment. He's just such an idiot heel, donkey heel. He's just like, oh, for God's sake. It really annoyed me. I remember watching Norman Elsa, and I was just like, what, Kurt Angle won? This is so bad.
Yeah, I hated him, and you know the thing is, see, when my dad watched wrestling, it was one TV growing up, so my dad suffered through it, and it was like Kurt Angle would say things like, you've hurt my feelings and all that, and you just hear my dad go, shut up, you wimp. Davey shouting at the telly again.
No, I always liked the promo before that. It said the pre-recording where he's interviewing The Rock.
Yes.
All the different edits. I'm just going to quite say, I like the story because Triple H kind of tried to, he was in the booking, wasn't he? And he was trying to, they were saying, oh, we're going to put the title on Kurt Angle, and he was like, oh no, he's not a legit champion. And Gerald Briscoe, who was like into like amateur wrestling, was like, well, if you and Kurt Angle was in a real fight, who would actually win? And apparently Triple H just shut up, and that was kind of the decision to make him the champion.
Brilliant. So he becomes WWE champion, he beats The Rock.
A little bit of you just died inside, didn't it?
Oh, it did. It still hurts all these years later.
Don't be afraid to cry.
19 years later, still hurts. And this section of the show is actually called Ups and Downs because his WWF title run was sort of a weak champion. He was destroyed again by The Undertaker at Survivor Series. He won a couple of the UK pay-per-views by help from Edge and Christian and the Radicals. Something as well, I think, that shows how little faith they had him as the top guy at this time. When you go back and watch the Armageddon Hell in a Cell, Stone Cold enters last because he's the draw. The Rock's the second guy. He enters second last. Kurt Angle enters third. It's Rikishi and Triple H that enter first two, then Kurt Angle, the WWE champion. Like, he either enters first or last. Like, surely he has to enter first to watch them all come in, and like, they all just swarm him. Third is just such a... Is it true to say that they didn't have much faith in him at this point?
Probably not. I think he was kind of a placeholder, because I think they already knew that the big main event of Mania X7 was going to be Rock Austin, because they were still the two big stars at that point, and Angle was kind of a placeholder, and Something is even more so to a lot of faith in him. The storyline for his match at the Rumble with Triple H is more about, in the video package, about Stephanie and Trish Stratus not liking each other than they two.
Mm-hmm.
And Triple H really said, you're only the champion because I've allowed you to be. Like, you were in that Hell in a Cell game, but why did you allow him in that match as well? Mm-hmm. You could have easily pinned anybody in that match.
And could have easily pinned The Rock like he did, because The Rock had just been stunned.
It's kind of like in 2011-2012, you know, the main feud going ahead was going to be John Cena versus The Rock, while Miz is just standing there like a third wheel and he's the WWE champion. It just, again, it just made him feel like a placeholder.
Yeah, it was so out of place in that match. We've got everybody else. Well, so was Rikishi as well. But it sort of turned around there with Rikishi into a
fight. I know.
but it was just such an afterthought, and you were thinking he's not getting out of here alive, he's not coming out as champion, and he did.
Yeah, and it was sort of a flat ending as well.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. that was like the final boss of like wrestling, the six-man Hell in a Cell.
It was funny you mentioned Rikishi. We talked about, obviously, you look at, like, you know, the fat dancing man gimmick. At that time, you're like, it'd be great to see him as WWE champion, and as soon as he became a serious hero, it was just like, no one wants to see you in a match.
I felt Kane in there rather than Rikishi.
Wouldn't we all?
See, I think Kane and Jericho were used to pad out that card, because you see when they put the six big guys, it's like, oh god, 2000, end of 2000 is not a good time for us. We have a lot of injuries.
Well, Lee, it's huge issues to deal with. I mean, it wasn't just a bit coffee.
Jesus Christ.
Just getting made references in the game.
Oh, I almost forgot that feud started over a spilt cup of coffee.
Can I ask you, do you think it's maybe due to Vince McMahon's dislike of actual amateur wrestling that maybe he was booked in this manner?
No,
I don't think so. I think it's just he wasn't a proven guy yet, because he would have a few more runs with the belts. I think it's because he wasn't proven as a top guy yet. Like, a lot of people's first runs aren't the best, but then they get a better run later on.
I think, you know, the goofiness, I think he just needed something to like maybe counteract his sort of crazy violent side to the Attitude Era. You know, everybody just goes ham on each other, but then you've got a guy who's very sort of, he's got morals about him, he's a hard worker, he's a people's representative, and I think putting him in that goofy role kind of maybe puts him out of place a bit, maybe just see how he reacts, but it just creates a bit of a weird dynamic. But maybe he just likes, you know, testing this sort of stuff.
Okay, so justice was restored at No Way Out 2001. The Rock got the title back. It's weird.
Let it go. Let it go.
It's weird to think about, but a week before WrestleMania, the former WWF champion did not have a match on WrestleMania. Like, can you imagine, like, one of the champions going into WrestleMania this year, Daniel Bryan, Brock Lesnar, losing the title a month before, and then not being featured in a high-profile match at WrestleMania? It's just, it's not the done thing these days, but here we had a week before WrestleMania, Benoit, Kurt Angle was kind of thrown together. This led to a few...
Well, Survivor Series and Jinder Mahal.
Don't.
Yeah, I mean...
I wouldn't put Jinder up there with Kurt, to be honest with you.
That was justified.
I mean, Kurt didn't even know Jinder's name, he announced him as Jinder Mahal.
I think the thing with Survivor Series as well, though, like, if you don't have a brand v brand match, like...
Mm-hmm. I know, I was
just trying to pop him.
Yeah, and it worked.
You need a convincing champion for both brands as well, and, you know, the original plan, just
see what I mean.
It's like you've hit a button, and it's like, it's the big red button on Dave, there is no stopping this. The show's now a rant about Jinder Mahal.
Where's my pyro?
So... this becomes a sort of one-up feud. It's a...
Sorry. Ross is laughing because I just threw out a fishing rod to David, and with little Leland, he came right in. Continue, Ross.
So, he... Benoit feud, aye. He said since that when this match was put together, he knew he'd get a great match out of Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
And that he knew he was determined to go out there and make sure his match was the best match on the card.
A lot of people were putting that as like one of the top 10 matches of WrestleMania. Well, obviously they can't talk about it now, but
yeah. And that was the same week as WrestleMania 19. It was like WrestleMania's top 10 matches, and this was going into like Mania 20. And yeah, number 10 was this match, Angle versus Benoit.
It's a great match. It's certainly... You look at that card top to bottom, this certainly stands out as the best pure wrestling match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you need matches like that because you've got like the street fight and the TLC match and stuff like that. You need stuff to balance it out.
Although it did sort of turn into a brawl, sort of halfway through, but there was a lot of really solid mat technical wrestling at the start.
It was a good feud. I think at that point it was like I started to feel sympathetic towards Kurt Angle, because when he gets his medal stolen, and it's just...
Yeah, Chris Benoit puts him down his trunks.
Yeah, he realises where they just were, like...
Okay. Yeah, a hell of a feud with Benoit over those gold medals as well. Like, yeah, did it not end up as two or three falls, and it was like pinfalls only, submissions only, and then it ended with a ladder match.
Yeah. Before that, they had the 30-minute ultimate submission match as well.
Oh, gosh. Is that the last ultimate submission match that there's been?
It was only been the one. I think that's it. Basically an Ironman match, but with just submissions.
Just submission moves, yeah.
Who stuffed his gold medals down his...
Clearly the worst thing Chris Benoit has ever did.
Wow. It's like, I know he would do like silly stuff at Austin later on in the year, but
the views of Ross do not reflect the views of Eat Sleep Suplex Street
Suite. Because this helped show the two different sides of Angle. Like, he had the silly side, but this is where he started to show that wrestling machine that you would hear about, the intensity of it. Because even though it was only 6 days later, at Benoit, the thing on Raw where he made Angle tap out in the crossface, even though it wasn't a official match, but you see before that, Angle and Tetley just focus on things like, it didn't count if it wasn't a match, because he has to be the best wrestler. That was what this thing was about, being the best technical wrestler, because guys like them and Jericho, who Benoit had a similar feud with the year before, that they were the wrestler, but everyone else was the characters.
So it goes on, Scott, it's good you mentioned this wrestling machine, because he completely throws that away to become Stone Cold BFF.
Well, I'm surprised you're not mentioning the King of the Ring match for Shane McMahon.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that in my notes yet. So, Kurt Angle wrestles three times in one night for the second King of the Ring pay-per-view in a row. He doesn't win the King of the Ring, unfortunately, loses to Edge. Edge gets sort of away with it because he had such a good career after it, but he really did nothing with that King of the Ring.
Yeah, it wasn't a great King of the Ring.
He was that a trophy that year as well? And that sort of set up his feud with Christian, because he gave Christian something to break over him or something.
Yeah, he went, I'm not going to Billy Gunn this. And they're like, you kind of did Billy Gunn it. Like, you did nothing with it. 10 years later, you did something.
Then another piece of you just die.
Yes. So Stone Cold BF, Shane McMahon, the legendary wall that would not break.
The glass chain that wouldn't break, yeah, and Shane basically very nearly died from that spot.
Shane said even that apparently he found later that Vince backstage was watching this, and he very nearly just came out and stopped it, because at the end of the day it's his son. Mm-hmm. And he almost did it in the match, and when Shane being the stubborn as he is, he wanted to keep going.
That is kind of a match, if someone says wrestling's fake or anything, like, okay, just put on that match and be like,
Watch this.
Yeah.
We know.
Both,
Angle nearly ended the career of the best wrestler in the world.
Because they were literally saying, it's like,
wait.
The best in the world! Shane McMahon!
No, Quacker, do it with more gusto. Do it the way I want it to be done.
He didn't finish what she wanted to on Raw.
Yeah. I love it. It's funny.
So we get classic moments after this with Stone Cold BFF, Jimmy Crack Corn.
Jimmy Crack Corn, and I don't care. I've won an Olympic gold.
The cowboy hat.
Oh, God, the cowboy hat.
Even though at WrestleMania he said in Texas, lose the freaking cowboy hats.
And this sort of led on to the start of the invasion. Even though Stone Cold doesn't want a tag partner, he's there saying to him, you know, I'm with you. He sort of became like an MVP of the Alliance invasion storyline.
Because both are injured, so all they could do is like, what do you do? And just put them backstage segments, and they're just so funny. The night after the King of the Ring, just quickly saying, it was like, Austin's like saying that he had like a tougher night than what Kurt Angle did, because he had to face two people at the same time.
I know, he's like, I fought three people across the night.
He's like, you're pathetic!
do you think if they if The Rock couldn't return for the invasion, that Kurt Angle would have been like the head guy for WWF against the Alliance?
Definitely.
Could see that happening, yeah. Because he's been WWE through and through, wasn't he? He was.
Yeah.
And he remember at the start of the career as well, he had a bit of a a lot of negativity to say about ECW, so having him sort of move over to the Alliance, it just didn't make any sense.
I think the fact that he was the mole, the
Aye.
I think that showed how dedicated he was. As much as I love The Rock being back, it was a case, when you look back at it now, the fact that Austin betrays Angle, who's been like his second in command, I think that would have been a better storyline, because they did have the feud over the WWF title, you know, bringing it to...
It's like a great match, that SummerSlam match. Mm-hmm.
Great match, SummerSlam, Unforgiven, he gets his second run.
Do you know why he won the title?
Because it was in Pittsburgh, basically. Oh, no, it was 9-11?
To do 9-11.
Yeah.
Vince... It is a nice thought by Vince, but I think he overestimates his own product when he went, America needs a nice moment.
He should have won a title in SummerSlam. It just felt like an afterthought when he won it.
And the fact that he won it to give America the big uplifting moment and was a complete flare, as if Vince went, alright, it's been 4 weeks, they'll be over it by now.
I know, Vince.
We've got a story to tell.
Like, back to him. But I do like I said before, his first one, he maybe wasn't proven. I think this is where he finally proves he was worthy to be a top guy, because the night after the invasion we get screwed and he comes out to confront Austin and Alliance, the pop that he gets is just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like he's the, you know, the new hero of the WWF.
And he also interrupts Stone Cold Appreciation Night, because Milkomania runs wild.
Oh, yes.
And we've talked about this quite a few times.
I love it so much. It's JL's commentary going, he's on the hard stuff, no semi-skim for Kurt Angle.
The lines that JL's come out, like when he sprayed Stephanie, the Million Dollar Princess is now the Dairy Queen.
Mm-hmm.
Got milk, he says, and he's big, serious Oklahoma accent. Got milk.
I know, it's... God bless JR, he tries so hard to give it such legitimacy, like the beer truck, because it fits his character, the milk drinker, because it sounds like an insult in Skyrim.
Eat your milk drinker. Eat your vitamins, drink your milk, that kind of thing. Yeah.
To the piss and lead up to Armageddon, he was taking the piss out of everybody, and did the angle, I'm going to drink a big glass of milk.
That's what he always says, he's going to go home and drink milk.
And you know, it sort of fits with his goofy character a bit as well. You know, Austin does the beer truck sort of stunt, and then Angle as his sort of jokey second in command, he does something similar. I think nobody else could have pulled that off.
No. Get some revenge on Sean Stazer by throwing him into the milk truck.
As well, right?
He was throwing cartons as well before he got the hose out.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you don't get the context of the milk, it would more look like, refer back to one of Sarah's questions on the WrestleMania quiz, it looked like the WrestleMania, the Rage of Climax, the ending of that, so...
Kurt Angle spraying everyone with his Raging Climax!
Jesus Christ.
So
we go from the invasion, he jumps over, he jumps back, he's the second in command, he turns heel straight after the invasion storyline, because him and Vince feel like people should be more grateful for the sacrifice he made. So he's...
Well, he was claiming credit for beating the Alliance, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's because sort of, The Rock says to him, it's like, if the Alliance were the one who was to say you would have just stayed with the Alliance. That's kind of why it's like, I don't trust you.
So, just a quick rundown of his late 2001, start of 2002. He's unsuccessful. He's knocked out in the first round of the Undisputed Championship tournament, won by Chris Jericho. He starts a feud with Triple H. He's eliminated. He finishes second in the Royal Rumble. He then beats Triple H at
No Way Out
2002 to become number one contender for the world title at WrestleMania, only to lose it again on Raw. And this is... For the third year in a row, he's in a thrown together match. I know it's your favourite wrestler, Scott.
Well, it's too soon, even though it was like ages ago.
I remember watching the build up to this WrestleMania. I don't remember this ever being announced.
Mm.
And then when Kurt Angle comes out, I'm like, oh, is this like a segment? Is it? And then Kane came out, I'm like, was this announced? Was this like on Heat? Like, what is happening here?
Yeah, we're just really thrown together last minute.
It was like, we can't have a WrestleMania without Kane and Kurt Angle at like the peak of their powers, like, we need to get them on. It's a shame, obviously. I think when people talk about Baron Corbin being a poor choice for a WrestleMania opponent, maybe look back at his early years at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
He's like Braun Strowman now.
I was going to say, you compare Kane to Baron Corbin as a angle opponent.
Well, I mean, it makes a bit as much sense. Corbin made more sense. So...
You're dead to me now.
He continues the Vince McMahon second in command sort of storyline. He's the second draft pick. Vince McMahon tries to comfort him because he picked The Rock first, going, why didn't you pick me first? He goes, because I knew Rick wouldn't pick you. as if that would as if that's a, like a comfort, like
they I don't want you. I'll take you.
I didn't want you because they didn't want you either. But now I want you. And then we made reference to the intro, hair versus hair with Edge. I think this is a great match, a great feud, but at the same time shows his goofy side as well, and his willingness to do anything.
Yeah.
Because we seen him, we saw him grow up back in TNA's hair. The entirety of his WWE run, before and after, he's never had a single hair on his head. He's committed to that role.
How did it all start again? It was just, how did the fallout between him and Edge?
I think they had a match at Backlash, Kurt won, then Edge started the You Suck chants.
Well, funny enough, that all started, that kind of started a lot earlier. It's when Kurt Angle interrupted Triple H's return, they started chanting You Suck with it, so I'm guessing they must have took notice that
they were going with it. Did they think?
You know when Edge and Booker T feuded over shampoo?
I know he's had a lot of hair-related feuds.
Yeah, that was maybe the hair of your mat because it's going to tie into the whole shampoo thing, but Booker didn't want to do it because he didn't want to get Edge because they knew Edge was going to go over. They thought, okay, who else has that needle who needs their head shaved? Kurt, your hair's basically gone.
Yeah, like receding.
Yeah, the best thing about that feud is when he's showing him all the pictures and all the stuff's written on the back.
Well, you suck, I'm a dork, I'm a tool.
And I have no testicles kind of thing. Yeah.
Jesus.
What, Dave?
Not me, Kurt.
That's a soundbite, ladies and gentlemen.
Take that out of context.
Please welcome our eunuch, ladies and gentlemen.
I didn't know Fifth Man was a Wayne's World fan.
I like that Wayne's World reference, actually, that's really good. So, hair versus hair. Then, 2002, he's involved in the tag division a lot. He really does have a lot of ups and downs, Kurt Angle. For his ups, when he's not involved in the world title scene, he has great matches, but it just sort of feels like he's an afterthought.
I think he's the first person to make Hulk Hogan smack.
That's it, right, was, yeah. First person to make Hulk Hogan tap out.
In that ridiculous swipe that I think Hogan should have been wearing rather than Kurt Angle.
Yeah, I know, I love how Hogan slagged anyone's hair when he was wearing extensions. There was a man in his 50s wearing extensions and he had a skullet.
That's so bad.
But he makes Hulk Hogan submit in a sort of nothing feud. He becomes the first ever WWE Tag Team Champions, which are the current titles we have today.
First time he won it as well, for the tag team champions.
Along with Chris Benoit. I think it was the only time he won it, wasn't it?
Actually, yeah, as well. And that's how he became a Grand Slam champion as well.
Yeah.
Because he won the TNA one a couple of times, but he never won the WWE one again. And then he becomes a Paul Heyman champion. Not just a Paul Heyman champion. Defeats the Big Show, and this leads into one of the best WrestleMania main events ever. His feud with Brock Lesnar.
Mm-hmm.
It's so well done, the fact that even the Big Show, even though he's a third wheel, he plays his part brilliantly. I think everyone in this feud deserves credit.
Because he brought in, well, obviously Team Angle, Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin, which was a great team as well. But yeah, going into that, you couldn't ask for a better sort of main event for both guys, because both have very similar careers starting. Well, obviously they've got the amateur wrestling background, and then it's like their first run in the company. They were like WWE champion before the year was even out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it showed a great confidence in both these guys, because they were kind of younger compared to some of the other people on the card. But they chose these two main event that Mania, when you had Hogan, Ray McMahon, Triple H, Booker T, and The Rock Austin, like the final chapter. So like any of those matches could be the main. I think that was probably the start of the whole several different main events, even though there's only one true main event. But these two went on last, it was a real testament to how they believed in both of them.
Yeah, and I think we've mentioned it many a times here, we're having so many stats men on the show, but it's the first WrestleMania main event to feature two men with their real names.
Yeah,
really? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
Although Brock Edward Lesnar, I think I'd have preferred as a ring name.
What about Kurt Steven Angle?
What? It's just mad that just Brock Lesnar's parents went, we're going to name this boy Rock and he'll become a future WWE champion.
So, in the lead up to this, he gets his second neck injury, and I think this sort of starts his downfall, because he's such a company man. I think that's sometimes that goes for you with things like Hair v Hair and King of the Ring and the Milk Truck. That sometimes it goes seriously against you. And I think, as much as a great main event, I think we would gladly sacrifice it if he maybe took a bit of time off. You sounded unsure there, as if to go, I mean, I quite like this match.
Because like there was a backup plan apparently to have Benoit take his place, like, and have Lesnar beat him on SmackDown. But like there was one where he did the switch it, and it looked like Lesnar just squashed him. A lot of people thought, oh, they're just getting the tail off him quickly, and then there's a double serve, like, actually, no, the match is going ahead. So they were prepared if he couldn't go, but obviously Angle being quite stubborn for his own good, they'll soon see he wanted to go ahead.
Well, the issue with Angle, though, is it's not just for main events and stuff, it's like every night he's doing that style, he's just constantly just... like going out there just to make sure the fans are like getting what they're seeing, that, yeah, but it's just not good for his body because he's like, what, how old is he at this point? Like 33? 32?
He's 30s, yeah, because that's about 20.
Yeah, and you just can tell his body's just not 30. The same as it was when he started in 99.
Yeah, I think he's actually, I think he's about 34 at this point.
I thought you were asking what age he was now, like, he's not 34 now.
Yeah, he's 50 just now, But yeah, he would have been 33 at the time.
It's almost like Robocop now, just how he has to move.
He did mention that in the documentary as well about, he was talking about like Mania of Mania. He said, for the sake of, being in the WrestleMania main event for the first time, and considering how well his last two WrestleManias went, it was just sort of unannounced matches, but against two very credible opponents. But I think him going in as champion to main event, I think, had he passed on it, I think he would have regretted it. But I think he knew he was going to go for neck surgery anyway, but he decided to take the chance and do one more match. And the way it turned out as well, he got like an alternative fix from the usual procedure, because again, he's a company man, he wants to be back as soon as possible.
He's also the first man to kick out of the F5.
Was it?
Yeah.
This could have easily been a Tommaso Ciampa situation, because original Ciampa was also going to push through his one, but obviously it got to like, no, you need the surgery now.
I think it could have been some mistakes.
It could have been the same thing where Angle like, no, you need the surgery now, because I think he did kind of aggravate me and make it a bit worse. Because he takes a really bad bump when Lesnar pushes him off and he gets Angle and he lands and he grabs the back of his neck.
So, post-WrestleMania, he says in the documentary, he's backstage having almost like a seizure. Brock Lesnar's concussed, he doesn't know what's going on after that F5.
You mean the shooting star?
Sorry, the shooting star. Yeah, he hit the F5, I botched that just like he watched it finish. I always feel bad for Lesnar, people always have a go at him, like, he's £300 and he can do a shooting star press, what can you do?
I know, it's like, funny because everyone saw Angle moved out of the way and it was like, no, it just was so much force.
Yeah, I don't
actually moved him.
I don't think Angle could move out the way at that point. He was like dead on his back, he was given everything for that match.
Improvised last minute.
It's bad he had so much muscles what saved him, because if his neck muscles wouldn't been so much, he would have died.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah, so he goes away for a wee bit and we'll discuss when we come back from the break the sort of the wrestling machine persona, some of his classic feuds, SmackDown general manager, and then his untimely release from WWE. But first we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to go get a glass of Cravendale with the boys here. We're going to get some lacto-free for Quacker. But here's Kurt Angle making Stephanie McMahon a Dairy Queen. We'll catch you in five.
The Outlaw Stevie James,
the hardest part of the ring, Crowbar,
we are the Pubs,
and you are listening to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Look at you, you make me so proud. Everybody's got an ECW, WWE, WCW, Stone Cold shirt on. Everybody's flying.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
What are you doing? What?
I'm sorry.
What kind of shirt is that on your chest? What?
I screwed up.
What kind of shirt is that? What? Is that a Stone Cold shirt?
No.
Is that an ECW shirt?
No, sir.
Is that a WCW shirt?
No.
What?
No, it's not.
I thought we were here to appreciate Stone Cold Steve Austin. What? I thought we were here to appreciate Stone Cold Steve Austin. What? Take that stupid shirt off. Take the shirt off. What? I said take the damn shirt off. You damn right it's your bad. Take the stupid shirt off. I want it.
Whoa! That's Kurt Angle's music, but my God, he wouldn't be coming out here in the... My God! What is that? That's Kurt Angle, all right, but it's a damn milk truck. Kurt Angle's driving a milk truck right up to the ring. and here comes Stasiak. What an idiot. Kurt Angle's hurling those milk cartons. He's become an Olympic dairy man. Oh my God.
Hi, this is Jack Morris, and you are listening to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Welcome back to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. My name is Ross McLeod. I'm joined by David Hockney, Andy Mitchell, Scott McLeod and Kwaku Aji. We are discussing Kurt Angle, possibly one of the greatest men to ever lace up a pair of boots. We spoke in the first half from gold medals to WrestleMania 19. And before we move on to the wrestling machine and TNA force in his career, I want to send a big thank you to Stevie James and Crowbar of The Purge. I recently interviewed them. You can find it now on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify and all good Android podcasting sites. Also, thanks to Jack Morris of the 99.
And now?
We recently interviewed him. That interview will be available Easter Monday, that's the 24th. So while you're illegally downloading Game of Thrones and stuffing your face with chocolate, give Jack Morris a listen. So, moving on to the wrestling machine portion of his career, we talked about his neck injury. He comes back, he feuds with Brock Lesnar. I think this is round about the time of the greatest SmackDown match ever. The Iron Man match. We've talked about his ultimate smash match, the 60-minute Iron Man match. He wins the title at Vengeance, he loses it here. He becomes like the face of SmackDown at this point. Brock Lesnar's Vince's like corporate champion.
We talked about this a lot in the History of SmackDown episode we did last year. And we talked about guys who represent SmackDown, and around this time, you thought SmackDown, you thought a guy like Undertaker, but you also thought Kurt Angle, and this was it. Because like, we saw the day, that day, it was Kurt Angle. And I forgot my next point. I had a longer point, but I forgot the next bit because I was too busy eating.
Well, Scott thinks of his point. David, would you like to make a point while Scott has a brain fart?
No, yeah, this is where things started to sort of pick up for Kurt Angle. I think his move to SmackDown was probably the best thing for his career. You know, he sort of made a name, you know, becoming one of the first tag team champions amongst, you know, the SmackDown 6 as well. Like, they had outstanding matches on pay-per-view that time. Some were even better than, like, sort of the main title feuds. But I think, you know, that the pinnacle of, you know, how good he was that Iron Man match. And what I'm surprised is that, why did they give this away on free TV? They could have sold, like, so many pay-per-view buys with this kind of match.
Don't ask, don't tell. Just enjoy it.
I think they wanted, the ratings were obviously lowering, but it was also to do with the fact that all hands were on deck because they were worried about Raw's ratings. And Paul Heyman was basically just told, don't annoy us, do whatever you want. So I think Paul Heyman just went, I quite fancy a 60-minute Iron Man match, why not?
I think I was going to say a little bit of the whole Lesnar feel, like, around that time, they were the two guys, like, each man's most normal food for that time. And it started off weird because they were kind of the thing where they're all the best pals at first for Lesnar's side to and there's a weird dark segment where they both square up and then Lesnar just grabs Angle and just kisses him.
Yeah, that was. There was also that bit where they were backstage and then Angle's drinking his big gallon of milk, Brock pats him on the back and then he spits all over like someone backstage. Like, they had a really, they had a lot of really goofy segments with them too.
They had a romance. Austin and Angle.
But I just don't think it suited Lesnar. You know, Lesnar's this like absolute killing machine, and yet he's acting like a bit of a joker.
I think it was something different. It was fresh.
I think it was weird to see Lesnar do that with Bartley Street because Vince basically goes up to him like, who are you, why are you doing this, and essentially slaps them. That's what turns Lesnar back to the intensely beast, for lack of a better term, that we know him as.
It's as if Lesnar's becoming tame and he wants to, like the AJ Styles segment, I'm going to get the real AJ Styles, and he slaps him. So WWE title feuds in 2003, and then in 2004 he starts becoming a bit more of a heel again, you know. And he begins a feud with the late great Eddie Guerrero. So he beats John Cena and Big Show at No Way Out 2004, and this, for the second year running, he gets a WWE title match at WrestleMania. He's starting to get good, notable WrestleMania marquee matches that suit someone of the talents like Kurt Angle.
Yeah, this feud was arguably one of my favourites as well, considering that, you know, he was again sort of drawing on his, like, I'm your role model, I'm superior to you, you should be cheering for me, I'm setting an example for anybody. And, you know, he was referring to, you know, Eddie was a drug addict, you know, he'd made a lot of poor choices, and, you know, that somebody like someone with his lifestyle shouldn't be representing the company, whereas him, you know, he's been, you know, acting like I said, acting like a role model, and he should be representing the company.
Yeah, because, like, they're both great wrestlers, but character-wise, you couldn't find two people who are more opposite, because Angle was, like, the All-American. He believes doing things the right way, which he believes is the right way, and he didn't think Eddie was whole lie, cheat and steal thing as a guy who should be representing the company as the champion, and his whole vendetta against Eddie pretty much was his whole story for, like, the remainder of 2004, when he was a wrestler and when he was, like, on his on-screen role when he was injured. He was always out to try and screw over Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah, and he became SmackDown General Manager. Do you remember the segment that led to him becoming General Manager?
I remember it was after the draft, and he comes out to Triple H's music, and then he says it because Paul Heyman quit, so he got sacked. Do you mean when he was in the wheelchair?
Yes, when he was in the wheelchair,
When Big Show was pissed off and chokeslammed him off the side of the... I can't remember, like, it was on top of the tiers, and
he chopped him off a balcony.
Yeah,
that was it. Yeah, this led to possibly one of the... I laugh so much at this segment because it was meant to be so sincere, and as if Kurt Angle's world is falling apart.
Because who's Big Show holding it first?
Tori Wilson. Hall of Famer Tori Wilson. There are two Hall of Famers in this segment, and she's one of them. he brings Tori out to, like, have a go at her, because he's in a wheelchair now that he's general manager, because Paul Heyman quit, and as Andy said, how he got the role. And he just yells at her, he's tears in his face, and he yells, "Because of you, I can't have sex with my wife anymore." And it was just, it was so out of place, because it was like, we've got Kurt Angle as this goofy guy, like this abstinence guy. Kurt Angle doesn't have a wife. Kurt Angle doesn't involve in relations, you know. And he just yells, "I can't have sex anymore." And it's just, my God, what is this?
Equally silly thing where on Judgment Day he had his assistant Luther Reigns.
Is that Robin's older brother?
Distant relative. But he comes out and Luther Reigns goes to Judgment Day to Kurt Angle's music, and he's pushing this massive, like, box, and they're like, "What the hell is that?" And just from out the box raises Kurt Angle in his wheelchair. And then he calls it Tori Wilson name, because he's going to put her in a match, and if she loses, she gets fired. Then Tori awkwardly has to skirt round this big box because it's taken up the majority of the aisle.
So he eventually loses the SmackDown GM job. La Luchadora's big brother. I can't remember his name.
El Rey Luchador.
El Rey Luchador.
He's basically running off WCW. It's a black match.
He cost Eddie Guerrero the WWE title more than once.
This was actually the very first WWE clip I ever watched. JBL versus Eddie in the steel cage.
This was a weekend we had a family tragedy, and I was only young, so all the Waynes were getting ferried about to, like, whoever could watch them, and because we all liked wrestling, and this was the week of this match. It was like, I just stick the wrestling on for the Waynes. I would, look, sit down, the adults need to deal with adult stuff, and I've seen this match about 14 times, and it was all just that weekend. One house, two house, three house, put the wrestling on, please God, no.
At least we got the frog splash off the cage.
Vince McMahon chases him about the ring with a crutch.
It's like Gargano and Ciampa.
See, you said about The Rock saying to him, what happened if the Alliance won? What would have stopped you staying there? What happened if he really was, like, crippled or injured, like, and Vince McMahon just throws a crutch at him? Like, that's a lawsuit.
I think
Vince McMahon's done worse things and not had any losses.
This was just weirdly amazing. There's a scene in American Dad where he stands on jury duty. There's a guy trying to go because he has to keep care of a kid, but turns out he's got a fake like balloon that he put in a kid, and Stan takes a knife and stabs it to prove it's not real. Goes, what if that had been a real baby? Goes, he just crosses his arm and goes, sometimes it is. I don't know why my mind went there, but I wouldn't want anything to be real.
Moving swiftly on, we had further matches with Eddie Guerrero. He eventually beats him at SummerSlam. He then gets in a feud with the Big Show, where he shoots him with a tranquilizer dart.
Oh god, bloody tranquilizer dart! But that was actually when Big Show made his return. They were in, like, him and Eddie were having a lumberjack match, and Big Show literally just destroyed everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Teddy Long was GM.
Right, Quacko's favorite GM.
Yep.
Alan's least favorite GM.
Yep. Thank God Alan's not here to disagree.
And it was like, Teddy Long gave Big Show the choice to face either Eddie or Angle, and he actually, well, he signed Eddie's contract for the match, but then he snapped it in half and then just signed an angle instead. I thought, that's a heck of a twist.
Yeah, I love this time, because they tried to misdirect you by saying Big Show returns in 2 weeks later, that same show, and then just there's a mass brawl, he comes out, and Michael Cole, Michael reacts and like, what? I thought, wow, this is breaking news. Like, Michael was still hard at conveying emotion even back then.
Because
still hard. Yeah.
Well, Big Show came out, you get excited.
That was a big show in my
pet. He was part of the revival, he went hard all day, all night.
For God's sake.
Yeah, because the lead up to it was like Big Show returns 5 weeks, Big Show returns 4 weeks, and then it got to 2 weeks, and then it's like, oh, let's just have him.
No, screw this, let's just jump the gun here.
He shaves Big Show bald, I suppose. When you mess with Kurt Angle's sex life by throwing him off a ledge, you get your head shaved.
The weird thing was, he's given this weird half haircut, and then Big Show gave this whole thing as if he'd been violated, like, I had to shave the rest of my hair as a reminder of what Kurt Angle did to me, like, he cut your hair.
I know.
Your hair wasn't that good to begin with, you probably needed a haircut.
Yeah, it was like Samson, you know, his power was in his hair.
Yeah, and he's Big Show's still bald now, like, yeah, he doesn't grow it back, so like, what was the problem?
No, that's the funny thing, he actually did grow it back by the time he went to ECW, and then when he went away for a bit, he was bald again.
Yeah, he's just bald.
I think he just accepted that it was, in ECW, it was like starting to like, go further and further and further and further back.
Well, it's that big, no one would notice.
At least it wasn't as far back as like Undertaker's is now.
Yeah. As the ECW reigns declined, Big Show's hairline receded.
Well, he was carrying that brand.
So he then after that, he has a classic feud with Santa Claus at Armageddon 2004. Yes, Kurt Angle had a match with Santa Claus. And then at the Royal Rumble, he begins a feud with Shawn Michaels.
This great match.
Excellent feud.
Great build up.
Leads to a cross-brand match that Kurt Angle wins. His first WrestleMania win since WrestleMania 18. And it's an absolutely show-stealing match. Like, people say Shawn Michaels is Mr. WrestleMania. I think if Kurt Angle had started a bit earlier and maybe been given the proper respect he deserves at WrestleMania, he could have easily taken that crown from him. Because this is third year in a row he has had an amazing match.
You saw some of the segments that led up to, like, Kurt Sammy's example of not being afraid to me in a writer's cell, and he saw Faith Beach, he mentioned scenes for this, like, he brought Sensational Sherry out and signed Sexy Kurt, and then he beats up Sensational Sherry, he brings Mark Jannetty back, beats him up and all.
Yeah, it was a weird feud, he brings back, like, Shawn Michaels' greatest hits, and just, like, he just beats up everyone Shawn Michaels loves.
He's one step away from bringing out Shawn Michaels' dad and being hip-hop and all.
I know, Dana Shane McMahon.
Well, he done the ladder match recently. That's me. I've won my first ever ladder match. Well, you technically won a ladder match years ago, so.
So, he then goes to Raw. It doesn't really work out on Raw for him. A lot of the problems I always say about this time when people get drafted to Raw, on SmackDown, the top guy on Raw was always Orton and Cena on a different pedestal, and then everyone underneath.
Well, he was kind of being used as one of the first big opponents for Cena. It was his job to help get Cena over, and he tried his best, but
he didn't succeed.
Don't forget his feud with Eugene.
The invitation all over the gold medal.
Wow. Yeah, the Kurt Angle Invitational. He loses his medals to Eugene, and then has Eugene 2 years in a row had SummerSlam marquee matches, one with Triple H and one with
Kurt Angle.
The fans booed on it, and it was like,
yeah. And then immediately straight after, Kurt Angle gets announced as number one contender because Jericho had left by that point.
Because Eugene was number two contender after Jericho, and Kurt Angle beat him.
Can we talk about this weird comic kind of New Year's resolution in 2006 where he said, essentially tried to prove he can say anything, people still cheer him, like wishing America would lose in Iraq.
He said his favourite country was France. He'd like to make Jesus tap out.
Well, so he had the VAR as his manager.
Yeah,
he'll do everything in the power to get.
And he said in big quotes, "I'm not a fan of the black people." He said
he's not a fan of blacks. He wanted to make Jesus tap out. He wanted America to lose the Iraq War. Classy as always, Vince. And what was the other one?
He thought France was the greatest country in the world.
And France was the greatest country in the world. I get the biggest boo as well. He was racist. He disgraced the troops. He was, anti-Jesus. because they said France is the greatest country in the world.
Jesus really like crucifixion sales and bloody ECW and nearly turned them off wrestling.
Remember like a few months prior, he had that feud with Booker T and Charmel.
It was before
he got drafted across.
We wanted to have bestiality sex with him.
Somebody who doesn't know what bestiality is, or they really don't like the look of Charmel.
So he moves back to SmackDown after sort of a forgettable run on Raw, becomes world champion, his great matches with Mark Henry and Undertaker, and then he loses the title at WrestleMania to Rey Mysterio. Again, bit of an afterthought here. It's
a match report of 9 minutes or something.
Yeah, it was a marquee match, but I think this was this really annoyed him. This was one of the factors of his release.
Mm. Yeah. I remember it was a big shock when he came over because I think we'd just seen him on the Raw.
Yeah.
It was on a SmackDown, so everybody knew he was a Raw guy. When he came out, everybody looked so confused. And also, the feud, again, he's an afterthought in the world. Actually, the main thing was between Ray and Orton, because Orton was trying to disrespect Mary of Eddie Guerrero to get under Ray's skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the best thing about him winning that world title was his match with Undertaker at Nowhere. Yeah.
That was a cracking match.
Undertaker shot lightning at the Rumble and made the ring fall apart.
Yeah, they had to make that match the main event over the Rumble because Undertaker was going to collapse the ring.
Pretty sure Dean Ambrose is one of his druids.
I think I've seen that.
That's right, yeah, he was. But yeah, that finish at No Way Out, I think that's the only way they could have gone, with a bit of a screwy finish, but it was somewhat justified.
The original idea was to have him do it at Mania, but...
Yeah, but Kurt Angle didn't want to break the streak out of respect for Taker. Yeah.
So, he goes to ECW. I feel bad for everybody involved here, because they get a pick from Raw, he takes RVD, he gets a pick from SmackDown, he takes Kurt Angle. Heyman's delighted, he eventually, after that moment in 96, 10 years later, he's gotten Kurt Angle in his promotion, and at this point, we'll not go into detail, but his personal demons had sort of taken over. Vince wanted him to get help for his injuries and take time off. And
well, he asked Vince for so he can have a lighter schedule, but he said no.
Aye, because they said to him, take time off and take time to heal and then come back, but they weren't willing to commit to a full-time lighter schedule for him. I think we're a company like WWE can see the point because they are on the road that year, mm-hmm. but they did, what we should say to their credit, they did offer him rehab and plenty of time to heal. Like, come back when you're ready was the open. You see Vince McMahon crying in the documentary, when you have someone, there's only so much you can do to help someone before they just say, I don't want to be helped.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, he leaves WWE in sort of a sour note, and he turns back up in TNA a couple of months later. I'm going to ask you, was this Kurt Angle's prime?
I don't know, I never really watched TNA, so...
Yes and no, because it's weird how quickly he's wrestling TNA right after leaving WWE, because we always talk about these whole no-compete clauses and all that, but yes, and that he had great matches. He was already a bit worn down by this point because of injuries, and unfortunately the injuries would get worse because he'd keep going at that same sale as you talked about, Andy. For him, it was give everything or don't do it at all.
Still doing moonsaults from a steel cage.
No,
He was definitely one of the most influential figures in TNA. Mm-hmm. He'd set up a couple of stables. He actually broke Samoa Joe's unbeaten run in mm-hmm. TNA. So
he held three titles at once.
Yeah.
Held every title at once.
I was going to say, it wasn't his fault, but he was one of the examples used of to really show how much TNA valued outside talent over their own. The fact that a main event went off air with him holding every belt in the company.
Yeah, because he had the IWGP Championship due to their partnership with Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And then he won, even won the tag titles himself.
And then he would lose two of the titles in the next pay-per-view and then retain the world, again, for multiple times. And really, he actually lost the IWGP belt to Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah.
So a match we would have loved to see in WWE, but unfortunately.
Yeah, he also had a feud in New Japan, I don't know if anyone's seen it. He beat Brock Lesnar for that title.
Yeah, I remember him fighting that as well.
We mentioned that in the Brock Lesnar show as well.
Brock Lesnar debuted his rubbish tattoo.
His
big cock sword, yeah.
I am the sword master. He makes Brock Lesnar tap out, by the way. That's not something you're going to see in the WWE highlight reel.
And he appeared at Wrestle Kingdom as well. Kurt with the belt.
He appears at a Wrestle Kingdom. It's Scott Sage, yes and no, for the fact that he gets worse as he goes on. He deteriorates. It's unfortunate to see. But at the same time, when he first comes in, those matches with Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, the likes of, like, he fought Sting, that's like a dream match.
With Jeff Jarrett.
Seeing WWE, the blood feud with Jeff Jarrett.
That was his best feud, yeah.
Don't forget, because he changed his name to TNA, but Nigel McGuinness and him, when Nigel was Desmond Wolf, they had a great series of matches.
Yeah. I forgot how many times, like, I didn't look it up. I mean, I lost count how many times he faked retirement in TNA.
I know.
He's like Mick Foley. It was like, if I don't do this, I'm going to retire. It was like the top 10 list. He made his way through everyone in the Bound for Glory series. He got to the last two, and then Jeff Hardy wins the world title. I was like, surely you should retire then? Like,
him and Sting kept doing that a lot, especially in like 2010 onwards.
Did he announce his retirement in a salmon suit?
No, so Mark Henry still hasn't.
That's always the warning sign.
No, if it's a salmon suit, or like when Ric Flair wears red, you know he's losing. If it's a salmon suit, you know they're not retiring.
Or if someone comes to WrestleMania getting played live, they always lose.
Aye.
Except for Ray and me at 22. But a little love, like I said to you, like some of the ridiculous ways wrestlers try to get around copyright from stuff that when they leave WWE, Kurt Angle changing attitude to it's real, which lacked the same impact as.
Yeah, it came up to like a rapper singing, like.
Aye.
It doesn't suit him.
Wasn't bad enough to try to remix his music when he went to ECW, then they made it even worse when he went to.
The ECW remix took out the bit where it's meant to be used up. Yeah,
it's to stop people doing it. It's like when Shinsuke changed his theme.
Yeah, to stop people singing.
Still did it.
Yeah.
It doesn't work if you go tour in Japan, because they'll all understand it.
Yeah, a lot of times he hinted that he wanted to come back to WWE. I think WWE just kind of wanted to stay clear of him because he did have a lot of personal troubles here. He had a lot of outside DUIs and drug-related incidents. I think WWE, with post-Benoit scandal, didn't want to bring someone like Kurt Angle broken down back in case, not a severe Benoit incident, but, a serious incident where someone just breaks down in the ring.
Well, it was incidents like that, I think, that made them more strict with their testing and athlete wellness and all that. So I think it's because they'd learned, he said, from their mistakes. Mm-hmm. That's why they didn't want him back.
So, Andy, I know you... I've not really seen much of his TNA, but Scott, I'm welcome to you because you watched TNA sporadically. Favourite feuds in his time with TNA, because I didn't really watch TNA because I watched WWE at the time, and this was also, I had a blip where I didn't watch wrestling at all.
I'd say the obvious ones is between AJ and Joe. You talk all day about those two, but I think them up there are the most obvious ones. But I think, as I mentioned earlier, the Nigel McGuinness or Desmond Wolf, whatever you want to call them, feud is one of his more underrated highlights, because I was post him going his main feud with AJ, so this was kind of a middle period where he wasn't doing anything, so I think it gets overlooked by a lot of people.
I think in terms of drama though, I think, well, the one that really always stuck out with me in his feud in TNA was his one between his ex-wife Karen and Jeff Jarrett. You know, he brings in China for a mixed match challenge, for a mixed match at Victory Road, I think it was.
Sacrifice.
I don't know why, that just keeps coming back to me, because there was an element of reality about it. Mm-hmm. And I think when you always bring that into a wrestling storyline, it does create a bit of drama, it creates a bit of gossip, and everybody's talking about it. And that's the one, as long as people are talking about it, you'd consider it a success, wouldn't you?
You always talk about weird ways, do they do storytelling? Because they had Jeff Jarrett beat Angle in that feud because Karen kept getting involved, and then in the last match, Karen was taken out, so it's just me and you now, and he beats them. The weird way they take Karen out is they have Kurt chase both her and Jeff up the steps, and Jeff accidentally knocks into Karen. She goes tumbling down a set of stairs, and that's how she's written off TV. Eventually, you nearly killed your wife, and now I'm going to fight you in a wrestling match.
I know. I think Jeff can claim I was kind of grieving at that point.
And they just have it 5 minutes of they two shouting each other before minutes come. This is awkward television. Can we cut away from this, please?
It was some scheme in Glasgow. Charlie, your dad's squaring up to your mom's new boyfriend again.
Don't against this.
Yeah, they mentioned the kids quite a lot in that feud. I thought that was a wee bit on the verge of tasteless, but the matches themselves were really good, minus one move. Because I don't know if you remember this, around about 2011, as a signature move, Randy Orton started using the angle slam.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And Kurt Angle took offence to this and said it should be a finisher. So to disrespect Randy Orton, he started using the RKO as a sort of transitional move. Again, as good as he is at wrestling, he could not pull off an RKO. It's honestly, it's the worst thing. Picture the Vince McMahon, the first Vince McMahon stunner, where he just kind of falls. That's what this RKO looks like. It's absolutely horrendous.
I've seen him do the RKO, but yeah, it's just a bit, it's just really awkward and weird looking.
Yeah.
I mean, is it kind of like, you know, Jeff Hardy's Twist of Fate stunner in a way?
No, it's not even that good. It's just, it's basically, it's crap.
He just like falls flat, really.
Google it, basically. But I remember Chris Hero, when he got originally released his first one in NXT, to get to WWE, he'd do the pedigree on the knees and have his opponents kick out at one.
So before we go on his return to WWE, he leaves TNA. He's a Hall of Famer. He's won every title they've got. Some all at once. He had a brief tour of the UK indie scene. He wrestled for Rev Pro. He came to Glasgow's own ICW. Mm-hmm. He main evented Fear and Loathing 9 with current WWE NXT UK star Joe Coffey. That's weird to think Kurt Angle was an ICW ring.
He faced Joe Hendry in Defiant Wrestling as well.
He actually had a really good run. See, for as much, it got bad press WCPW just because of the YouTube involvement at the time. But the actual feuds Kurt Angle was in with Cody Rhodes and Joe Hendry and Del Rio were actually really good feuds, and they were really good quality matches.
I love Joe Hendry. Like, he does his custom entries. He did one for his match with Angle to the tune of Born in the USA, and the song was not as good as Joe Hendry.
So it's broken January 2016. Kurt Angle is going to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. Going to ask you quickly, is there anyone that's ever deserved it more, just from a purely wrestling standpoint?
Don't think so, no.
Probably, but I can't name them right off the top of my head.
Well, that's a no then, Scott. Yeah. we do the Hall of Fame, John Cena inducts him, we get the big WrestleMania pop at 33, the You Suck, and we think that's going to be it. And then the next night on Raw, in possibly the most underwhelming way to introduce a new general manager, minus the Terry Long part.
I was hoping.
I think we all just kind of went, because I think everyone was like, Kurt Angle.
It's a Raw after Mania crowd, though. They know.
I knew Kurt Angle was going to be GM.
And then Terry Long runs out, and it's just like, any other week of the year, but just not tonight.
No,
Teddy.
No, I wanted Teddy.
I know you wanted Teddy. Although I say it any other night of the year. Any other household except the McLucas household.
Was Teddy Long not also in Kurt Angle's Hall of Fame class?
He got inducted because they went, a Hall of Famer will be your new general manager, and they made it look as if he was a pure egomaniac that needed an intro.
It was Vince that was announced as well.
It was weird.
Just Vince doesn't need to do announcements like that anymore. Never mind.
Raw GM was sort of hit and miss because he was flubbing these lines a lot. He couldn't say WWE, it was WWE.
He did start well, like, he had a fun thing when he first night with Enzo and Cass, but he did the spell, that spell, and then he walked away and goes, that's not how you spell soft.
and then a scene straight out of Family Guy, my black son, Jason Jordan. Jason Jordan is bomb. Jason Jordan, who is not young enough to be Kurt Angle's son.
That was the thing that was holding it back.
I know we mentioned Brooklyn Nine-Nine a lot in this show. We mentioned Brooklyn Nine-Nine a lot in this show. It's like the scene where Charles Boyle meets his adopted son's older brother, and you see it, and it's just this guy, you feel like the suburban wilderness with like a big beard. He's in his 40s, like, yeah, you're not my son's brother, I'm not adopting you. It's a shame that Jason Jordan, it started off kind of goofy. It worked quite well because Jason Jordan was sort of manoeuvring into that arrogant heel who was using his daddy to get ahead. It was a shame he got injured. Would we like to have seen that as maybe a WrestleMania match?
No, I feel like it was a bit of an afterthought because everyone was hoping it was Chad Gable because that made
yeah.
sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Jason Jordan just kind of fell flat afterwards. I mean, why you can break up American Alpha? They were actually doing all right at the time.
I remember Chad Gable's tweets like, wait, so am I not in a team anymore?
Yeah. poor Chad's been like,
and then Daniel Bryan came out and said that Chad Gable was his son.
Yes.
I don't like when
that was on Smack, wasn't it? Yeah.
I did like when SmackDown invaded Raw and then Chad Gable got to see Jason Jordan for the first time since it went straight for him.
Oh, it's the is it
I Kurt Angle son.
Or there was one where Jordan was teaming with Seth and they were all tied to the Rumble and they run into Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable and someone tweeted like, it's always awkward when you run into your ex and their new boyfriend.
You say Chad Gable made more sense. I just picture Triple H with a Duloc wall chart with a picture of Kurt Angle going, this is why this doesn't make sense. This is why this makes sense. Vince, I know you find it funny, but are you seeing why people don't believe this is real?
Vince, these cows are small, but the ones out there are far away.
And the worst thing is, Jason Jordan, like, I think it was like NXT the year before they won the tag titles at NXT Dallas or something.
Yeah.
Jason Jordan's actual dad was in like the front row.
His actual dad's in the front row. And then on SmackDown, the last SmackDown of 2016, when American Alpha won the SmackDown tag titles, Chad Gable's wife and daughter and family are in the audience, and so is Jason Jordan's. And they actually do, it's on the WrestleMania 32 weekend documentary, you see Jason Jordan's real parents. Then you see them on SmackDown, then there's a YouTube follow-up video with all their parents. So it's like, it wouldn't have worked for either. You see Jason Jordan's dad, you're like, is he spitting image?
Yeah. Do you know what the worst thing about that angle was? Like, well, no pun intended. The build-up to it was actually quite intriguing, because he's like, oh, I've got this really big secret and stuff, and I think if it comes out, it could really affect my career. You think, okay. And then this happens, you think, is it flat? Is it not?
No.
I just think nobody tries to blackmail him after. It's like, what was the point of sending these texts then?
Yeah, it was never revealed.
Yeah,
never revealed. I think it was like implied.
Much like Shane McMahon's locked box or something.
I think it was implied with a lead up and the sort of Survivor Series thing that it was Triple H and Stephanie blackmailing him because they weren't happy he was back. But just a quick question, because we will discuss who we'd like to have seen Kurt Angle retire against. Had Jason Jordan not been injured, would you like to maybe see Jason Jordan retire, Kurt Angle?
Maybe.
No.
I don't know. It makes
storyline sense, I think.
Yeah.
So Scott says it makes sense. You're a maybe, but yeah, it makes sense.
I would. No.
What about you, Clark?
Yes, because the build. It's all about the build up, to be honest with you.
And the build, I will say, the build was really good. Mm. The sort of spoiled daddy's boy, and when he was doing the stuff with the Shield, he was like the nerd that didn't know he was a nerd. They thought he was cool.
It was like when you invite your dad along to your like night out or something.
Yeah, so we're going to touch on that next. His return to the ring was sort of a last minute thing due to a meningitis outbreak at TLC 2017.
Yeah.
Kurt Angle returns to the ring as part of the Shield. It doesn't really fit.
Your dad taking you to Laser Quest would be best.
He is on Team Raw for Survivor Series again. I think this is when we start to see Kurt Angle deteriorate a bit, because we mentioned these good matches on the indie scene. This is when I think we started to see, this is maybe why they're not letting you back in the ring just yet.
When I heard that he was the announcement, I was like, surely he's going to come to the ring and something's going to happen, he's just not going to be a part of the match. And then I actually seen him wrestle, and it was just not the old Kurt Angle, because like I said, he moves like RoboCop, because he's like his neck's all fused and stuff,
and his knees were all given out as well.
It's kind of like, I'm glad he's doing what he wants to do, but oh my god, I can't really watch this because I don't want him to get hot, kind of thing.
Angle actually came out recently in a Q&A after his match with Corbin about why he kind of deteriorated when he came back, because like we all thought like before then he was on that tour in the UK, he fought Joe Cawley, fought Zack Sabre Jr. and Red Pro, like, and he looked fine. And then suddenly he's deteriorated, and he claims that his body wasn't not wrestling regularly, his body started to tense up in the months where he was out, and he started to deteriorate a wee bit, and that apparently claims this, he thinks this rushed his retirement.
See, I don't buy that for a simple fact. We saw him when he was wrestling every week on Raw and SmackDown. It was bordering on dangerous at times. There was a few DDTs and suplexes that weren't quite safe on the likes of Samoa Joe and AJ Styles.
You remember that Survivor Series team as well? Like, it was very sort of talent heavy that would help sort of carry it in a way, because you had Triple H, Braun Strowman, Samoa Joe, and Finn Balor. And I think that was the closest we would get between Kurt Angle versus Shinsuke Nakamura in the WWE, because they were on opposite teams.
It was nice to see like Kurt Angle, Rude, Kurt Angle, Nakamura, Kurt Angle, Cena one more time.
Triple H, Rude.
Yeah, like, and all these Kurt Angle style matches, but I think the whole McMahon drama ruined it. We talked about his WrestleMania retirement tour. Baron Corbin, we've talked about it endlessly. in the past few weeks in the lead up to Mania and on our Mania shows, which you can check out at Suplex Retweet, Anchor, Spotify and iTunes. Who would we like to see him retire against?
John Cena.
You think John Cena?
Yeah.
What about you, Andy?
Probably Triple H or something.
Triple H, Scott?
Gable.
I think Gable would have been a good one had he been the son.
Because it's a weird thing, like, the whole thing, everybody wants him to fight Gable, and on the same night he announces he's fighting Baron Corbin, he has a throwing match on Raw against Jack Gable, and I'm there saying to you, like, this feels like they got the script reversed. Like, no, Kurt, you're meant to say Gable at Mania and Corbin tonight.
It's almost as if the whole TLC 2018 and then the Christmas Raw, where they announced the new era, that sort of felt like the end to the Corbin feud. They didn't really need to pick it up again. Kwaku, if you had your choice, who would you maybe like to see him retire against?
I've got to say maybe Triple H. I'm going to go with my man here, right. Triple H.
The reason I say Cena is because it all stems back to the Ruthless Aggression promo, where John Cena had his first match against Kurt Angle, and obviously John Cena inducted into the Hall of Fame as well. I just feel like
It would have been
full circle, and it would have been very suitable, and then Cena like gets the win. But I can see why people maybe didn't want to do that, because like, oh, it's just Super Cena, he has to win because people
would have complained.
Yeah, I know.
But then I think they would have preferred to see that than Baron Corbin.
This is a thing. You say that, but I bet you, I will bet you everything I've got, if this was to happen exactly like that, Cena beats him, everyone would be complaining.
Do you know what I think actually might have saved it, though? Thugonomics Cena.
Nothing would have.
Don't even
see in the weird shorts he wore when he first fought
Andrew Woodhill. See, I think, like, obviously we were all complaining, oh, why? Maybe Cena would have made sense when Corbin got announced, but I do agree with Waku. Had Corbin not been announced, and we just went, John Cena will be his final opponent, it would have been all part-timers at WrestleMania, we've seen this millions of times, you know, what's the point, blah, blah, blah.
People would complain.
Yeah.
Part of me would have actually rather his last match been the mixed tag the year before with Ronda, because he didn't look the best there, but at least he didn't have to do all the work, because he could tag Ronda, and Ronda got a good showing. So his last match also being her first match would have been nice.
Yeah, because it would have been like him entering her entering one thing
when queer begins, another ends.
Yeah. But again, it comes back to the argument, though, I think Sarah said it before, if you're going to retire, you go out on your back.
It's an old school feeling.
I mean, yeah. It wouldn't have mattered if Angle had won.
Yeah, I think something I'd like to see, because I think part of the fun of wrestling is the anticipation, the build up, and the guessing what could have happened. I think, see, retirement tour, now they kept announcing he'll fight Samoa Joe and Raw, he'll fight AJ on SmackDown, blah blah. I think, see, if he had a bunch of open challenges, like a Ric Flair style one, where it's like, if he loses, he retires, and he gets to WrestleMania and he puts out an open challenge, and we see the debuting of the main roster of Pete Dunne. I think that would have been amazing. I'm not even going to say, like, oh, I thought about that leading up to WrestleMania. I thought about that, like I do many things on this show, on the bus riding. I just sat there and went, Pete Dunne would have been good, because they had the open challenge thing with Ric Flair a couple of times. I think if we did that with Kurt Angle, the matches that weren't as good wouldn't have felt as bad, because like, oh my god, it's Samoa Joe and Angle in WWE, it's Samoa Joe and AJ in WWE.
Yeah.
You'd have got the nostalgia feeling. Mm. And I think the fact that he put over Pete Dunne on his first night would have been a good thing.
And people probably would have forgotten that time where he's met him, just some Pete Dunne's music plays, Angle comes in and announces Pete Dunne, like, you can hear his music playing.
I know, he missed his cue.
And actually, you could even done an even better thing for WrestleMania if we swapped around a couple of matches, like put Drew in with Kurt and have Baron Corbin get beat by Roman. Like, it would be a big win for Drew. Mind you, one claymore, one headbutt too hard, and Angle injures his bloody neck again.
Because there was that sort of feud between him and Drew. You know, Drew absolutely decimates him and puts him in the ankle, actually makes him tap out with the ankle lock.
I think we would have liked to have maybe seen him get revenge on him instead of Corbin.
Yeah.
Because like we said, the Corbin one felt like it was finished, whereas the
Drew one actually had a bit more guts to it, yeah.
So, we're going to wrap up in just a wee sec, but before we do, I'm just going to go quickly around the panel. Favourite Kurt Angle match and or feud, Scott?
It's between the Ultimate Submission match and the main event. Me and AD, I can't choose between the two, they're too good.
Okay.
Probably favourite match is the WrestleMania 21 one with Shawn Michaels. Favourite feud, probably Brock Lesnar to Hurt and Free.
Yeah, I agree with Andy. The WrestleMania 21 match was probably my favourite. And favourite feud, probably feud with Benoit.
Quack it.
I'm agreeing with Andy.
Andy, so we've got three with Andy, and we've got Scott as the weird child in the corner. I'm going to go.
Like the free eyes. They all say that.
I think favourite feud, I'm going to go with Stone Cold during the Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think favourite match, just because I've watched it so many times, is the six man Hell in a Cell. I love a multi man carnage match. So on that note, that's our shows, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget to follow us on all social media at Suplex Retweet. You'll be able to find us using that on most listening platforms for Android, iTunes, Spotify and Anchor. Join us next week when Sarah Grieve hosts a panel of myself, Stacey Smith, David Campbell, Gary Kernahan and the EP Kwaku Aju. We'll be talking wrestlers and mainstream media. Did you know there was a former world champion that appeared in Home and Away?
No, it was Neighbours.
It was the Neighbours. I had Neighbours and then I changed it Home and Away. But the Godfather features a former NWA Tag Team Champion. Sabrina once fought a member of DX. Shredder was once played by a multi-promotional world champion. Find out this and more as we delve into all things mainstream featuring wrestlers. Until then, I'm Ross McLeod. I've been joined by Scott.
Thank you.
Andy.
Cheers.
David.
Thank you.
Quacker.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week.
Listen, c***s, I don't care what the f*** you think you're doing, whatever you think is more important with your life, you honking bag of dick tips. You know what you should be doing? You should be going online, you should be subscribing, you should be listening to the back catalogue of Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet, whatever the fuck you're doing, that's what you should be doing. I don't care if it's your mum's birthday, I don't care if she's feeling contractions, get on it right now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.